Hi, welcome back to Cafetera Intelectual. We are Doris Garrido and Sandra Elisa Lofuro. And after a short break, we are happy to be back. In today's episode, we're going to talk about Le Nous du Café, the Aroma Kit. Sandra has been able to interview Viva Le Noir, and she has asked her what it is, how it was built, who did it, and how it works. And let me tell you, this is a really fun episode.
So my full name is Marie Viva Le Noir, which is the French accent. But because so many people used to think that Viva Le Noir is my family name, I finally got rid of Mary. Although I have nothing against the name, obviously. It's just that I don't really recall anyone calling me, well, any of my friends or family calling me Mary. So it's just like Viva is good enough. And I like it. I like the idea that somehow you have to be joyous when you're cold. And I very much like that. So there we are. So this is just my name, and I am the aromatic director, aromatic department director for Les Éditions Jean Lenoir, which is the name of the company, but we are much more famous for Le Nez du Café or Le Nez du Vin or Le Nez du Whisky, depending on which markets. I entered this company at my father's request in 2013 or 14, I don't remember. And I was the business development manager for France, US, UK, and Scandinavia. I basically was Jon Snow at the beginning. Because I knew nothing of it. I had studied drama, I was a comedian, and I was a radio journalist and interpreter for music festivals. And well, I was specialized in indie rock music bands. So basically I knew nothing.
Well, nothing about this, but it sounds like you were an expert in several other fields.
I was quite good at interviewing people and I also was very good at refusing cocaine because that's not my thing. And in the music industry, I must admit that's a skill to have. Yes. But yeah, no, I moved a lot and I started studying drama from a very early age. My mother used to be a PR for a theater. So I was basically raised and born in a theater. So that's how I came up with the idea of being on stage. And I wanted to make people laugh because that's the best form of love you can be given, I think. It's just, and everyone will say that every comedian have a very profound and very deep need for love. But somehow I also think that in my current line of work, it's also very helpful because I tend to give classes about sensory analysis, and my way of doing so is I think that you learn better when you are not realizing that you are learning something, and when you laugh and when you feel empathy with the person speaking in front of you, I think that the message goes through directly to you. And more than that, I realized that by working with the kids, and the good thing is I was born at the same time as Le Nez du Vin, so basically the company and I were the same age. And the thing is, it's the olfactory system is so linked with emotion that it actually becomes relevant to talk about personal things. Because when it comes to olfaction, that's the main key to access your senses.
That's fascinating, yeah. So that's the attraction that you ended up feeling for this new career path, is that it is, after all, linked to emotion and performance and laughter.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Also that in this line of work, and specifically, I would say that mainly regarding wines, there's a poshness. I don't know. There's a sense of, you know, people looking at you, down-nosing you or something like that, that I really don't like and that I'm not feeling comfortable with. But the funny thing is that it's not the best people when it comes to tasting. It's not an accumulation of knowledge that makes a good taster. It's an accumulation of recordings of what you felt and your ability to express it that makes the difference.
Wow.
So,
okay, so you have to have felt something about the thing you're working with in order to, over the years, become an expert in it?
Yeah. For instance, I gave this example quite often. I had the chance to visit Bali a few years ago, before this whole mess. And that was my first trip to Asia. And I was very excited. And for the very first time, I tried jackfruit, mm-hmm. which is basically completely unknown in Europe. And my first take on this very specific flavor, I smelled armpit, like busy end of the day armpit. And then you keep on tasting it and you realize the depth of this flavor and the impact and the way that it could be a nice one and the fruitiness of it. And when it comes to coffee, and specifically with coffee, I would say, because you have the heat and you have the bitterness that you have to go over in order to analyze the aromas better, it's something that's really relevant, the jackfruit flavor. But having never been in contact with this smell and this flavor, the only thing I could link it to was something that wasn't that nice, which was butyric acid.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, if you haven't met it somehow in your daily life, you aren't able to recognize it. I mean, it seems so obvious when you see it, but my perception of what would be a blueberry is also very much impacted because I used to live in Canada, where you can have gooseberry and blueberry all around. And it's very different from the one we can find in France. So it makes sense when you know, you have like a blueberry muffin and this very tarty and sugary and vanilla type of aroma is linked to something that you can find again back in tasting, whatever you're tasting, you can express. But that'd be completely different from a European person having taste a blueberry.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you sort of bring this up every time I've heard you talk, is this this connection between emotions and sensory perception. And I guess I wonder, knowing a little more about your background now, knowing that you started in theater and journalism, I don't know, do you find, you've been working in this industry now for 7 years or something?
Yeah.
Are you able still to call back to experiences that you had before you realized that you were training your sensory perception? Do you notice a difference between the period before you worked in this industry and now? Are you more intentional about using all your senses when you're encountering something new?
I think there's two ways for me to answer that. As I said, I was born at the same time as Lune du Vin, which is, strangely enough, for the coffee industry and the coffee network, the most famous book we sell. That's 80% of our income as a company comes from Le Nez du Vin. And so it's always very funny every time I go to Expo, because we have the leaflets and we tell people, oh, we are doing all of these sensory kits. And say, oh, you're doing something aside from coffee. And it's just like, well, coffee is a very small part of what we do, but yes, we do that too. So since I'm nearly 40 years old, and I think I was the first beta tester for my dad. You know, there's this picture of me. I think I should show you, although it won't be a good resolution, but I love this picture because I found it recently. And this is me
sniffing away.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. If you are willing to send that to me too, that's such a beautiful photo.
Although everyone will know that I'm not a real red, so I might have to kill you after that, but well, I won't. So yeah, the thing is, that was part of my education, smelling. And I remember vividly, every time we had dinner, my dad was always drinking a little bit of wine. He was very careful with this. And he always let me smell his glass. And starting age six, he started to pour some very little, no, he allowed me to drink in his glass. And starting eight, he started to pour a little with water inside. So that was part of the way I was brought. It was to feel. And so I wouldn't know if this led me to be willing to start a career in theater and drama, or then afterwards in the family business. What I can tell you now is that since we've been in lockdown for almost a year or so, I try to go out every day. And although I live in Paris and that's a busy city, there's a big park nearby in my neighborhood. And every day I try to go walk there and, you know, just be in the nature somehow, although it's kind of not real nature, but still, and to smell everything. And that's the thing I always did. And I enjoy very much walking into a street and try to analyze what's something that is mainly unconscious for many people. And I can almost say that I choose my boyfriend by the way their smell, which may not be the best way, but
I mean, it is important though, absolutely.
But it is so important. You cannot be with someone you can't smell. And I mean, I don't know if there is this translation in English, but the very phrase "I can't smell him" or "I can't smell her," it's a French expression saying "I can't stand these people." So that's basically something that has come out to be true in some ways. Now I'm even more not acute, but willing to train that, knowing that I took over, well, took over seems a bit harsh, but I was named in charge of the aromatic department, meaning by that my work is very plural. I am not the one doing the aromatic mixing. I'm not the one creating the aromas. Some way we work with flavorists for that, but I'm the link in between the flavorists, the providers, the production part, and well, basically I have to know every time which are the aromas we use, which are the pure molecule we use, which are dangerous, which are very expensive, how long we have in stock for them, for many things, when should we think about changing them into better aromas, how long will they last, and all of these things. One of the things we pride ourselves at Edition is the fact that we guarantee all the aromas for 5 years. And it could be longer than that, obviously. But the importance of this guarantee for us is due to the fact that somehow everyone can make aromas. You can purchase strawberry aroma wherever you want. But will it last? And will it be something as true as the reality as you want to smell and to learn? Sorry, the grammatical expression of this sentence is awful, but
that was perfect.
So this is it, that you have to have some kind of strategy around this. And before that, my stepbrother was the director of the company. Yeah, it's definitely very family company. We are very different. He's a pure scientist, 100% engineer, and he has a doctorate in physics. And the guy is definitely a brain. And so he at first was in charge of the aromas, but then again, the reality of managing a company was a bit too much and say, well, I can't do it. So will you do it? And obviously my first reaction was, I'm not worthy. I'm not able to do that. I won't be, you know, I'm good at making people laugh, but basically that's the only thing I'm good at. Yeah, that's fantastic to live with me in 2 hours. But then again, there weren't any central person in charge of all of this. And as afraid as I was to take this responsibility, it opened so many doors. And I'm currently studying chemistry. I mean, it's chemistry 101, let's be clear, because I'm starting from really the bottom. But I just, like 2 weeks ago, understood the Lewis formula, the fact of writing down the element and then how many electrons would be aside and how it would make out a molecule. Mm-hmm. And it's those kind of moments when you realize that, oh my God, I understood that. And once again, I know nothing. The more you learn, the more you realize you just don't know shit. But it's fascinating.
That's amazing. That's cool. Let's take a step back. You mentioned this a few times, but why don't you take a moment now to clarify for me and the coffee industry behind me the difference between L'Edition Jean Lenoir and Le Nez de Café. And
That's cool. Edition Jean Lenoir is the name of the company. Le Nez du Café is the name of the product.
Got it. The end.
The end.
And like you said, the coffee kit is actually just a very small part of your market, really. The market is mostly wine and then whiskey and then maybe coffee.
No, actually, the right way would say wine, coffee, and then whiskey.
Oh, okay.
Reason for that is that the wine kit was released in 1981, the coffee kit in 1996. So sometimes you don't really realize, but it's been quite a while. And the whiskey kit has been released in 2013.
Okay. So much more recently, comparatively speaking. Mm-mm. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the inspiration behind the original wine kit? What brought your dad down this path?
Well, funnily enough, the more I think of it, the more I realize that I'm really walking into my father's steps. Because at the origin, my dad wasn't working in the wine industry nor in the perfumery industry. He was working in the cultural field. He was, there was this politics at the end of the 60s, early 70s. The national idea was just to spread over, decentralize culture everywhere in France, because before that it was mainly centered in Paris or Lyon or Marseille, but not very much everywhere else. So there's a cultural minister, a culture minister in at the government, who decided, okay, we are going to open various types of theaters and cultural centers. And my dad was one of the very first director of one of these cultural center. And he met with a lot of artists, whether they were, you know, graphic design, plasticians, musicians, every kind of artist. And he started to build up this festival about art and food. And that was in the 70s. And he started to say, okay, well, we could do something that's a bit transcendental and try to give tasting classes. And he was very good at it. He was awesome at speaking in front of people because he was passionate about wine. So at the age of 40, he started back again and learned chemistry. It went back to uni, learned chemistry, he passed the exam for being analogous technician. I'm never quite sure about how you pronunciate it. Mm-hmm. Well, he knew more about the chemistry behind wine and the aromas. Then he went back, he went to the south of France, and he met with different providers of raw material for perfumery. And he built up himself a suitcase of 120 vials in which he put some of the pure aromatic molecules. And every time he started to do a conference about tasting, he decided, he chose, you know, three different wines, and he extract from the wine by smelling them and just say, okay, I can smell this, this, and that. And he distributed the aromas to the crowd, asked them, okay, what do you feel? What do you smell? Do you recognize it? No, 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 let them talk. After that, he was telling them, okay, this is this aroma. And then he poured them the very specific wine he you know, found some of the aromas in. And that made the link of how everyone could be basically a taster. And everyone could enjoy something that most of people would thought that was just reserved to a certain elite. And still now, I guess it's very specific to wine, but it can also be related. I think that many people in the coffee industry could relate to that. When you say that you work in the coffee industry, the first reaction, I mean, in Europe, is just like, what do you mean? I mean, it's just, well, you have the main brands and this is it. It's more, it's a lot more famous, the craft of being a roaster, of importing good coffee. It's much more well known in the US or in Asia rather than in Europe. For this, I blame the fact that we think that we are the center of the universe and that we know everything when it comes to gastronomy. So we specifically as French people never thought that we could learn anything from the American. God, are we wrong? But well, when you go to a cafe in Paris, I mean, it can be charming. Obviously, everyone will smoke outside because it's not allowed anymore inside. I sometimes wear a beret, but the coffee is insanely disgusting.
I mean, it's changing slowly too, right? There's some third wave coffee shops in Paris
now. Oh, yeah, more and more. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. But the thing is that, yeah, to come back to this idea, what my dad was very good at, he was fantastic at making people feeling at ease with what they were perceiving. And that's how the Le Nez du Vin came to life. It's just at the end, he kind of made a, how do you call that, like a business inquiry?
Like an offer, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, ask around and then and say, well, would you be interested in me having something same as my suitcase? And a lot of people responded, yes, that'd be great. And that's how he decided, okay, well, now we have to figure it out. And he created it with my mom. So they had to narrow it down, decide about, many people ask us, well, why 54 aromas in the wine kit? It's just, well, because at some point you have to set a number.
Stop.
So it's just, there's nothing behind. So if you're into numerology, please tell me what it means. But I don't think there was any, you know, hidden design that behind that. And then what happened, because I'm following up with the coffee history, the Nez du Café history. In 1996, so before 1996, I think it was in 1994, my dad went to, he was invited to Colombia by Café de Colombia. And to thank them for inviting him and his wife, he offered them wine kits. And Café de Colombia producers and the whole network were just so excited about it and said, well, we need to have the same thing for coffee. So he worked, he hired a new chemist. We have to always settle the fact that at that time in the life and in the world of tasting it, and specifically in third wave, or in coffee, in specialty coffee, there were hardly any research yet. And it was really hard to go above the Meliès reaction type of aromas. Some people were trying to define the aromatic component for specific breeds or variety of coffee, but it was very narrow, such a very narrow area. So that was kind of groundbreaking to come out with the 36 aromas.
And this was and, in, you said 1996?
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep. And the idea, the book inside is also a lot slimmer than what could be done now, because obviously there are a lot of research about it. I mean, so many research on water impact, mineral impact, the temperature, the, I mean, that's a lot. But strangely enough, there aren't that many research made when it comes to the origin and variety. So that's also why we partnered with WCR. I mean, currently we're still working on it because we needed to have this feedback about the scientific community.
So I want to highlight two things really quick. One is that it seems to me that the real inspiration for the original Kit du Vin was education.
Yep.
It was to train, and not necessarily to train professionals, but rather to make wine more accessible by educating people's palates
yeah.
and, you know, senses.
Exactly that, because to be completely fair, profession were very reluctant at the beginning of the company. I mean, I think really they were very mean to my dad. Whether it was producers, wine producers, or enologists, they were very reluctant to use any kind of tool that could help them define which aroma they were smelling. There was still this time of, in French we say précaré, meaning you have this very small window of knowledge and you just cling on to that as much as possible as being as it being yours. Some people, when you're in the music business, in the indie rock music business, they take more fame into knowing an obscure Japanese 8-bit band and more than the music they make themselves. Okay, so sometime when you have some piece of knowledge, you just want to show that you have this knowledge, but you don't really want to educate people on that. And it's really hard to educate people without taking them for more stupid than they are, and to make it accessible. The more you make it accessible to as a mainstream knowledge, the more the professional of the proficiency will give you a hard time.
Because you're taking away their power in their perspective,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's, how has that changed till now? Is because my impression as someone who's not in the wine industry is that Lene Duvin is a like part of the essential toolkit for understanding and learning about wine. Is that the case within the wine industry too? Or are they still sort of defensive about it?
No, I must say we are very, we are blessed. I mean, That's great. I don't think that my father would have ever expected this to work that well when he started it, really. And I feel every day very grateful to have the chance to work in for something that I believe in, that I know very well, but that is so well spread. And so well loved and understood by people. That really is a great gift.
Well, it's an incredible tool. And so when you started, when your father, I suppose, started working on the coffee kit, what he found is that there was much less research to support even identifying what aromas to include in the kit or how to build them, or he just found that there was less information available to him. Is that right?
Well, yeah, it was more about defining them. Also, there were a lot less coffee specialists at the time. So there were very little people who knew that much about a specialty coffee. I mean, I don't know how they were doing. I think cupping was obviously something that's been used and yeah, used as a method for a long time. But it was really hard to find people who knew that much about tasting coffee. About creating the aromas, that's a whole different thing. Funnily enough, when I have to present what we do, the olfactory books, because that's specific name that we like to call them, when I have to introduce people to that, the main question I have is, oh, is this the aroma that you put either in coffee or wine for them to smell the way you smell? And you just say no. You don't put anything in neither of those beverages. Please don't. Just refrain from doing so. So there's oh, so that's what producers use to make the wine smell like this. No, not again. No, really not. Oh, all those extracts from wine. I don't have this with coffee because all the aromas are various colors. So if that was extracted from coffee, it would be all black. So that's good. But in wine, because we have some reddish and brownish and different side of aroma, some people would say, oh, okay, those are wine itself. Just, no, not even. So the main thing is to explain to people how you have an aroma, how molecularly speaking, when it comes to coffee, okay, you have some kind of jasmine in geisha. And yes, nothing has to do, you haven't bred, well, although this example might not be the good one because we linked that the coffee flower and jasmine are related. So let's just say that you haven't bred an apple tree with a coffee tree to have some specific coffee smelling like apple.
Amazing. Sounds delicious.
But yet, in some coffees, you will have this tangy crispiness of green apple smelling and tasting it. So, how so? Well, that's because of the molecule that is responsible for this aroma. And that can be found, I would say it's more of an origin thing, but also a fermenting process. And obviously, like most of the fruity aromas, it's much more perceptible. When you have a light roasting rather than a very dark roast.
So what you're saying is that the molecules that you end up using for the individual aromas in the kit, those molecules can be found in their identical form in coffee itself?
Yeah, but they're not extracted from coffee.
No.
Because let me give you another example. The banana aroma. It's in chemistry classes when you're in junior high, something like that. The first aroma you're acquainted with is acetate d'isoamyl. So, isoamyl acetate? I really don't know how you would say
No
it in English.
idea.
So, let's just say acetate d'isoamyl and believe me on that, and we'll all be fine.
Perfect.
So, yeah, this acetate d'isoamyl. You can find it in a chemical basis. That's different thing that Pfizer or Merck produce, but it cannot be extracted from a real banana, because if you extract it from a real banana, it will smell rotten in a minute, because the ensemble of the very DNA of the banana cannot just be extracted to represent the aroma. It's more a question of oxidation. Oxidization? I don't know.
Yeah,
Oxidation.
oxidization, oxidizing. Yeah, it's degrading, right? So you can't just remove the molecule because it will start to degrade
Yeah.
immediately.
You can't extract the aroma of a strawberry out of a strawberry. You cannot make a perfume of strawberry with a strawberry.
You have to artificially create the molecule so that it's stable. Fascinating.
And that's also, yeah. And that's also why it's sometimes so hard for people to understand that natural doesn't mean true to reality. Because most people would say, oh, I only use essential oils and very natural product. And I mean, obviously, it's good to use natural product. I'm definitely not saying that you have to use chemistry, but chemistry somehow is also natural. And that's the hardest thing to understand, that it's not because it's not made entirely from the true thing that it will smell the way it's supposed to smell, and that it will be durable, and that it will be either good for you. And when I'm taking the example of essential oils, they do also represent some danger, sometimes even more than the chemical products. And I know that because some of the essential oils you cannot ingest because they are very, harmful to harmful for your, for the body. Some of them you cannot put on your skin because also that would cause burning and itchy sensations and all of that. And it's not because some of it are some pure chemical molecules won't be harmful at all. So you really have to take into account that nature and reality are sometimes two different things.
Yeah, it seems like that's an important part of your job, right? Is approximating nature, but with reality.
Yeah. Well, I was having this discussion yesterday, and I think it's a great thing. Do you know that the origin of the word alcohol comes from the Arabic culture? Because it was alcohol, and about the coal, the thing that you put on your eyes. Okay. That distillated, well, not distillated, but that fermenting and all of this. And basically it means illusion. Coal meal means illusion.
I feel like, is that a commentary about makeup or something?
I'm fine. I love to put on makeup, and I very much admire and support women who don't, and really don't give a crap about what other people do. I just know that I couldn't live without concealer. That's it.
I couldn't live without eyeliner, so the Kohl is particularly important to me. Yeah, so tell me how that relates to your work, the illusion.
Madness. Well, using my favorite GIFs, first of all, do you say GIFs or GIFs?
GIFs, but both are
I don't know.
technically accurate.
GIFs. Yeah, that's. I never knew. When it comes to my work, it's kind of strange because I have different hats in this company. If I'm following up on what's on my paper, I would say I'm a business development person. That's what's on my salary note. But it felt to me like you can't really develop a market without explaining to people why you do what you do, and especially when you're such a niche product as ours. And it would be, I don't know, I think maybe a bit dumb to assume that everyone knows what we do, because it's not the case, and no one has to know what we do. And when I explain my work, I would always say that I'm not saving life. I can try to explain to people how to become better taster if they are interested in that sort of things. But in no way I would tell them that their life would be changed or anything. Somehow, if you are interested in better yourself into tasting and smelling, and if you are into food and drinks and any kind of things, and it doesn't have to be alcohol, obviously, I think it's a great way to enjoy your life. One of the things I always say in presentation is that the best thing about smell and taste is that that's the one thing that we cannot be replaced by machines for.
Job security, huh?
And yeah, and coming from someone who's just made self-doubt as an armory, like me, it's kind of very reassuring. that knowing that's your entity as a human being that makes you able to perceive things and to express them, that gives it body and reality. So, in some ways, it's all an illusion. An aroma per se, that's another very specific thing. An aroma doesn't exist. It's either a volatile or a soluble molecule that can be perceived by the brain, and that will be triggering something inside of you that gives its body and perception. But without your ability to perceive it, it doesn't exist. You give it form. So, smelling and tasting, again, it's also some kind of an illusion. And the very way that you would react to some aromas, like for instance, in our book, I really like the butter aroma. I love it. It's warm, it's cuddly, it reminds me of pastry, and that's my thing. I love it. My colleague hates it. She hates it because she smells the rancid aspect of it. And her reality isn't more right or wrong than mine.
Right. Her perception is different because her experiences have been different. This is why I
Yeah.
love the kit so much, is that if you two were over a cupping table and what you, I mean, you're talking about butyric acid, yeah, basically. And you were trying to describe this flavor in a cup of coffee, you would say, "Oh, it's warm, it's cuddly, it's delicious." And she would say, "This smells like armpit. I hate this coffee." And I feel like you would never reach on your own, just talking about it, you would never realize you were smelling the same thing. But because we have this
Yeah.
reference sample, it's almost like a third party observer, like an objective perspective, where we can have different interpretations of the aroma, but realize that we're smelling the same thing and describing it differently.
Yeah. That's why we need a common ground vocabulary when it comes to aromas. And generally speaking, also the reason why so many tasters are considered to be so such obnoxious people is that it's really hard to express an aroma, to define an aroma without talking about your own experience out of it. You would say, smelling some very specific molecules, oh, it smells like a wood campfire, or it smells like an old library, or when I came inside my grandfather's house and he was smelling the pipe, smoking the pipe, and he had this old Chesterfield seat, and I was, and you drew on that. But that's also because it appeals to people. You have to talk about your own perception in order to trigger some of these memory into other people. So the difficulty that it's not a question really about being bad or wrong. So you could never answer if I'm right, not if I'm right, but I'm always very ill at ease when people ask me, oh, what is your favorite wine or coffee or whiskey? And specifically about whiskey, because I specialized in it. I can say that there are many that I love, and I can tell them during the time of year or my mood what I would rather have, although I'm not drinking whiskey every day. But you can never say that's the best. That's insane. That you should never be able to say that's the best. You can say that you like it or not, basically that the end.
Yeah, it's still very subjective, no?
Yeah.
Briefly, maybe, can you tell us how aromas work? Or how we sense things. Yeah. The thing is that
Okay.
we're coming up on an hour already, but I know that you are actually you have such a wealth of scientific knowledge about this niche skill set, and I would like to hear a little bit about that.
Well, that's pretty high praise that I'm not quite sure I know, to be fair. Again, the more you learn, the more you realize you know nothing. So thank you for your kind words, but the way our rumors work. Okay. So as I said earlier, it's a molecule. So this molecule can either be volatile, in this way she will be flowing into the air and be perceptible by the nose, or soluble, in this way it will be inside a food or a beverage and it will be perceptible by the mouth. Both molecules will go, well, both types of molecule will go inside your brain and reach out to a very, very thin membrane covered in cilias. That's called the olfactory epithelium. This olfactory epithelium, so it has those, cilias like this. And at the bottom, at the end of every cilias, you have some receptors, a bit like a lock. Okay. And every molecule, they have different shapes that will be some fitted keys or not. And this, so cilias perceiving certain type of molecule, will also have something inside your brain, in the piriform cortex, that will light up some areas in your brain related to a specific aroma. So, for instance, you can smell freshly cut grass. And he had some Exonel in this. And you would also find Exonel in some different shapes in the pear aroma. But it's not the same aroma at all. I mean, you wouldn't expect it to be like this. And you have phenol in the rose aroma, but it has nothing to do with the burnt smell that you would define as phenolic type. And yet, so it's all a mixture and a component of things that will be triggering some part of your brain related to an aroma. Then the interesting part is that this olfactory bulb is very close to the hippocampus and the hypothalamus and the thalamus. The hippocampus is like the orchestra master of your hormones. Okay, that leads your body into thinking that you're thirsty, you're tired, you're horny, you're whatever you are, that's the hippocampus. The hypothalamus is related to your knowledge way of, well, the way that you bring knowledge to your brain and the way you learn stuff. It's also linked to navigation. And the thalamus, the Greek word for thalamus is like chamber. So that's very inside of your the very core of your brain. It's about your emotions. So what I mean is that from an aroma, okay, you go to your needs, to the way you understand about it, and to your emotions. So it's just very closely related.
And this ties back to what we were talking about earlier, that they are such personal and there are such strong emotional ties between
Yeah.
senses and memories and our experiences. I wonder if you could explain briefly again. There are two different kinds of like, I'm not going to use the right words, sensory exhaustion, right? Where one is that you just sort of become used to a smell, like
Okay.
the smell of your home. Or something where it's not that you aren't perceiving it, it's that you are perceiving it, but you don't notice anymore. And then there's the kind that's like saturation, right? Where each of those lock and key receptors is full, and so you can't receive any more input from that particular aroma anymore. Is that, can you please fix what I said?
So yeah, you are sometimes, yeah, you are anosmic to some of the smell. And first of all, the main smell that you are anosmic to is your own skin. And you can't smell your skin.
Oh.
You can take your significant other's one and smell, and you will smell his or her aroma and odor. And it has nothing to do with body odor, because when you understand about the sense of the perspiration smell, it's all about bacterias that are located specifically on your armpit, your feet, sometimes behind your neck, your southern regions and stuff like that. But it's not the odor of your skin. That it has, that's a different thing. But you cannot smell yours. That's also why when you are saturated and when you go into a Sephora, for instance, and the seller went at it and it just like sprayed you with so many stuff and you can't smell anything, you just want to smell the inside of your elbow because that's warm and that's something that you cannot smell, and it will kind of help you reset your sense of smell. When it comes to overflowing your brain with information, that's also a thing that we tell people when they want to know how to train their smell. We always say that you cannot really use more than 6 to 10 aromas at once, because otherwise you're just going to saturate your brain, because it's also something that we are never used to use. Never have we ever been told how to smell in class, or I guess in many households. So it's always very tiring, because you have to put your mind into understanding something that you can barely express. So I'm not quite sure I answered your question. I hope I did.
Absolutely, yeah. And then my next question is, how, if someone wants to improve their or hone their senses, let's say, maybe specifically their sense of smell, what is your recommendation? How
well,
does someone train for that?
Close your eyes, walk into your apartment and try to smell the different pieces of things. Just, we are what we see in somehow. It's just we perceive the world mainly on our sense of sight. If you want to train, just basically close your eyes and try a lot of different things and walk into a street. If your apartment is too narrow, and God, I understand, walk into the street and try to recognize every shop you're crossing by the smell they're releasing. You don't have to, okay, this is not very business-like for me to say, and I mean, I shouldn't say that, but you don't really have to buy anything. Obviously, I'd be more than happy if you buy Le Nez du Café and Le Nez du... obviously, but you don't need that. You need to just pay attention to it. Just smell. Smell and try to...
do everything.
Find out an image to link to this smell. And that will be your go-to image when you smell it somewhere else. And the second thing I also will tell people, and that seems to be very, very important, don't judge yourself. And I know I'm not the good person to say that, but you are not bad at it. You're just not used to train it. And even people suffering from COVID could train and could recover their sense of smell. Maybe not all of them, but it's just a matter of training and working on it. So you are not born with a deficient sense of smell. Very few people are. So that's the positive attitude to have out of this. It's just like, don't judge yourself and thinking, oh, I'm so bad at it. Well, again, my go-to phrase in this situation is, well, I'm very bad at speaking Chinese. Also, I never learned.
So it just takes practice.
It does. Mm-hmm.
Everyone can improve their sense of smell if they just work on it a little bit.
Yeah. And you have to be...
that's great.
...cool about it. Yeah.
Not put too much pressure on
yeah.
yourself. I heard that you're working on some exciting new projects. Lene, do you want to tell us a little bit about what's coming down the pipeline?
Well, as I mentioned it earlier, we had the chance to work alongside WCR for their study about, well, when they released the aroma wheel and the lexicon.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working on this for quite a while now, and I feel very much ashamed every time that I'm going to the States and some people ask me, oh, are you going to do a bigger version of Le Nez du Café? And the answer is yes, we are. we are struggling. And the reason why we are struggling so much is that we are trying to release something that is really relevant and linked to the sensory lexicon. That is hard. Because most of the time, you can release, as I said, you can release as many aromas as you want and say it smells like this, and you may not be wrong. But what we want to do is follow the steps of the scientist and the sensory analyst who defined this wheel and this lexicon, and to produce something that is both, well, sustainable, free of any dangerous component, and true to what they felt. And that takes an awful long time.
And it's a small team, right? It's a pretty...
Oh, yeah. Basically, there are only 7 of us. So, as I said, my stepbrother is the director. My dad and his mother retired. I mean, after working for so long in this company, they had the right to. We have one director of communication and marketing, one person in charge of export business-wise, one accountant in charge also of transportation, and 2 guys to make the kits and to fill up the vials. And in a few weeks, I will be going down to the south of France in our factory to learn how to make the mix for the aromas. So I will be doing some of the mixture for the aromas as well.
That's so fun. You haven't done that before?
I did during Christmas time, because we were in such a hurry and that was insane. So I spent 2 weeks down there to make the kits and to make some of the aromas.
Wow. That's kind of fun, right? I don't know. Is it not fun? Is it the kind of thing that you start doing and you're like...
No, it is. It is, but that's a lot of pressure as well, because you just don't want to mix it up, you know, to miss anything. You just want to, okay, is this the right volume? I am not going to make any mistake. I mean, this cost a lot of money, so I'm not allowed to be wrong. So yeah, that's kind of a big pressure.
Yeah. That's exciting though. Yay.
It is.
Well, is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we wrap up this interview?
Sandra, let's be honest. I talked a lot already. I don't know how you're going to make out of all of this.
It's going to be amazing. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. As I mentioned, I've seen you speak a few times and we've interacted briefly. And every time I just get the impression that there's a wealth of knowledge that I kind of, every time I talk to you, I get one new string to follow.
That's very nice, very sweet of you. But I think that it really comes with the fact that when you enjoy learning about things, you never feel tired of learning, and you realize that there's, again, nothing that you really know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just started, when you followed the presentation I did for CQI, and I talked about the sociological aspect mm-hmm. of olfaction. I had kind of discovered it a few years before, and I think it's absolutely fascinating as well. So there are so many things to talk about.
Absolutely. We actually didn't talk about the link to CQI at all, but that's probably okay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine.
Part of the time.
And thank you so much for your time. I know, especially with the time difference, I know it's the end of your day. And
well, it's a lot harder for you than for me. I mean,
I'm doing great. And I know that you're extremely busy too, because I've heard about the millions of things that you're responsible for. So thank you very much for setting some time aside for me.
Well, that was a pleasure, really. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to do so.
Absolutely. I hope we get to do it again one day. All right, I'm going to sign off. Thank you, Viva. Ciao, ciao.
Bye. Ciao.
Woohoo! Café de la Intelectual is an independent podcast produced by Doris Capido and Sandra Lufforo. Follow us at Cafetera Intelectual on Instagram, at Cafetera Pod on Twitter, or visit our website, cafeteraintelectual.com. Join our Patreon and help us keep creating unique content for the coffee community. Hasta la próxima! We'll see you next time on Cafetera Intelectual.